Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. This is my voice under the blanket. How does it sound now?
Welcome to The Willing Fool, episode 5. I am your host and lead fool, Paul Trimble. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, I want to dig into this concept that we've been talking about a little bit called the shape of reality or the fabric of reality. To illustrate the concept today, I want you to do a very simple thought experiment with me. Imagine that you have been hooked up to an IV drip that is administering a low dose of some sort of hallucinogenic drug, maybe some morphine in there. And as long as this drug is leaching into your system, you are filled with feelings of warmth, self-acceptance, deep love for humanity, and all of the creatures of Earth. You have a feeling of being loved by humanity, one with everybody around you, and in fact, everybody in the world. If you imagine that, it sounds pretty good, right? The people around you, they may go about their lives, and they see you, and they know what's going on with you, and they see you blissfully happy, but you, in this scenario, you have no real interaction with them because you're just there in your blissful, happy place. Now, my question with the thought experiment is this. Do you want that life? Or would you want that life for someone that you love and that you care about? Maybe you have a quick answer. It's easy. Maybe you have to think about it for a second. Maybe you're not sure. But I suspect for a lot of people, most people, it's probably a no. But it might not be so obvious why at first glance, because if you think about it, in this scenario, you've achieved what it seems assumed that we all want all the time, which is filled with an internal sense of happiness, a sense of peace, a sense of warmth, of loving and being loved. And so what's wrong with this scenario? Why would a person possibly not want this scenario that seems to contain all of what we seem to think that life is about or is the most important thing in life? And so it's not so obvious why you or someone else might say no to that scenario and that thought experiment. And if you explore why, you might come up with these explanations like, well, you know, that really can't last because if you live like that, it's going to have damage on your mind and on your body. Or you might say, well, I couldn't do that because other people depend on me. And if I'm not there to support or provide for them, then it's going to negatively affect them. And those are good things to think about. But let's just say, for the sake of continuing the thought experiment, let's say that we take all that off the table. So in other words, in our scenario here, it's just a thought experiment. You can go through this process with no ill effects on your mind or body. And let's say that nobody really is dependent on you, that no one's going to go hungry or not have what they need or not develop properly if you participate in this scenario. Then what? Then would you want this life for yourself? Then would you want this life for those that you love? Or a different way to ask the question is, would you admire someone living this life and think, yeah, that looks great. That's what I want to shoot for. I think if you think about it carefully enough, you'll find that to be just an unappealing scenario, that you don't want that, that you do not consider that a life well lived. And there is a reason for that that goes beyond just the standard objections that we talked about earlier, or the standard explanation that people like to give about, you know, we have this evolutionary history and all of our drives are pre-programmed to support survival and reproduction because that's what we do. If you think about it, that doesn't really help answer this specific question with this thought experiment about what you really admire and what you think is admirable. I think that it's much deeper than that. In some way, you sense that that way of living is not in concordance, in harmony with the shape of reality. Why not? The answer to that question is not science. It's not a scientific answer. science can't tell you that this is not an admirable way to live. That's not the job of science. In fact, science is an approach that is value-free. It is neutral as it can be. But that doesn't mean that the universe, that doesn't mean that reality is value-free or neutral. If the universe is without inherent or transcendent meaning, why not? Why not just pursue the path of least resistance for the greatest happiness and bliss and least suffering that you can possibly find? It's the simple thing to do. It's the obvious thing to do. But no, the reason for our rejection of this scenario in this thought experiment doesn't come from science. It isn't handed down from policymakers or a body of elders or anywhere like that. It actually comes from inside of you. And if you probe and investigate yourself a little, you might ask, why not? Why don't I want that? I would hazard a guess that there's something unattractive and discordant to you about being in a state of bliss, but detached in some way from the rest of reality, from your relationships, friends and family, from people. For most people, that would be one of the biggest reasons why you would not want the scenario that we described. Because the idea of being cut off from relationships with loved ones would be just an idea that you can't stomach. I can't lose that. I can't let go of that. Which, if you think about it a little further, is fascinating because those are also the sorts of relationships that cause the most pain, suffering, regret, constant inconveniences, minor annoyances, the relationships of the people in our lives. They create many, if not most, of our great vulnerabilities in life, and they leave us feeling like we wear our hearts on our sleeves outside our bodies. These are the kind of relationships that require deep sacrifice and lots of work that seems unending. It's almost, actually, if you think about it, the flip opposite of the blissful IV drip-induced existence where you have no vulnerability, no pain, no annoyance, no suffering. You don't have the work of relationship or those concerns or problems that are coming at you from outside yourself with these complex relationships that require sacrifice. And yet those are the very relational realities that we would not be willing to give up in exchange for pure bliss and, quote, happiness. And that is telling you something. Yes, it's coming from inside of you, but it is telling you something. And we just lose ingrained inbuilt wisdom like this in the busyness of life. We're so busy we can't even stop to think a thought experiment like this for 10 minutes. There's so much noise. We're always pursuing the next amount of money to pay the bills, success, trying to just get through the day, the week. And I'm right there with you, if that's you. But there's a deep key in this thought experiment that we're doing, a key, a clue about the shape of reality, that life is not about happiness and bliss and the pursuit of pleasure in the absence of suffering. It is not. Reality is relational. And any description or understanding about the shape of reality that does not take that deeply into account is deeply flawed, off base, or just pointless. I didn't reach that conclusion from science. I didn't get that handed to me as a religious story or an account or some sort of dogma. That awareness is inside of me. It doesn't matter who tries to convince me otherwise or dismiss or devalue the reality that reality is relational. That cannot be devalued or dismissed to me. And it wasn't handed to me by someone else. By the way, there is actually a term related to this sort of thought it's really helpful to know. I learned about it relatively recently, but it's called a properly basic belief. A properly basic belief is a belief that you have that doesn't come from anywhere outside of you. It's not external, or it doesn't come from proof, but it actually comes from inside of you. And this is a whole category that exists and that we often just don't have a label for, so it can easily be undermined or devalued. But there's lots of examples. If you think about your memory, for example, what did you eat for breakfast today? You could tell me your answer to that probably, but what if I said, prove it? You might really not be able to prove it, and yet that does not shed 1 ounce of doubt on your belief about what you ate. You could think about your childhood experiences or even your name. You know, if God forbid you lost all your documentation and all you had left was the memory of your name, it would not create probably even a shred of doubt in your mind about what your name is, but you might not be able to prove it at all. All you have is your memory. So your memory is one huge source. There's also just the simple act of perception. Like if you ask me to describe what's outside my window right now, and I say there's a bird sitting on a branch looking around, I can't prove that to you if I'm relaying it to you. Let's say I don't have a camera or whatever. But again, I'm fully confident in what I'm saying. And that is from inside of me. It's my perception. If you think about pain as an example, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to prove to someone that you have pain or the nature of your pain or the intensity of your pain. But it doesn't reduce the reality of your pain at all. Or if you think about the famous idea that we're just a brain in a jar, that, you know, for some people, maybe that carries some weight, but I personally, I'm fully convinced that I'm not a brain in a jar. Maybe I'll find out I'm wrong one day, but as for me, I'm living my life as if that is not the reality, and I believe that I have sufficient, properly basic belief and evidence that is not the case. I cannot prove it to you. I absolutely cannot prove it to you, but it is a firm belief that comes from inside of me. And I think we've gone so far in our culture that we have this weird assumption or conclusion that anything real or important about the universe, about life, has to be scientifically proven or provable. And that is absolutely not true. And in fact, is impossible. There's a lot of words that go along with this sort of thinking, and they all have slightly different meanings and connotations, but I'll lump them all together just to give you a little bit of terminology as a handle. Rationalism, empiricism, positivism, scientism, these are all related and somewhat overlapping terms that relate to this idea that there has to be material proof of anything before you should put confidence in it. And yet, so much of our real lived experience is absolutely not provable by science and is not scientific in nature. It is coming from properly basic beliefs. If you think about it, what matters to most of us and what matters most to us and composes, I would say, the reality of our lives comes through these types of channels, these properly basic experiences and belief channels: identity, memory, pain, relationships with other people, communication that's happening between people on a very nonverbal level, the meaning of relationships. It has just a complex web and history. What's held in a simple look or tone or word of someone that you know really well that exists in this very complex interconnected web of history and past experiences. It's so real. And yet it's not a scientific matter. It's not something that somebody told you either. It's properly basic. These are the things that are the most real, I would say, in our lives. They're infinitely complex, infinitely deep and meaningful. They're the things that shape and define our experiences in our lives. Love, pain, relational truth, betrayal, justice and injustice, sacrifice, self-giving and receiving, transgressions, neglect and abuse, forgiveness, healing. These are the realities that shape our lives. They're the realities that we have dreams and nightmares about, that we're shaped by over decades. And we know that these things, when we're on our deathbed, these are the things we'll think about. These are the things that will matter. These are the things that define, again, define our lives. and shape our lives. And there's such deep wisdom and meaning in just being aware of that. And therefore giving these realities their proper weight in how we think about our lives and the shape of reality. Now, on the other hand, think of how much of our lives is dictated or consumed by things that have nothing to do with those weighty things. One of the most dominant paradigms of our culture, our day and age, is a market paradigm. And in the market paradigm, the questions are very different. The focus is very different. It's how can I be successful? How can I work on my brand? How can I make a sufficient amount of money or profit? I've got to be able to monetize everything I do. There's got to be market value in it. In this many units, I need to be able to sell at this cost per unit. Somebody has to want to buy what I'm doing and how I'm spending my time and my products. I have to sell it to the marketplace. What products and ideas will conquer and dominate the marketplace? How do I get in on that? It's just a very consuming paradigm that is completely unrelated to that entire sphere that we were just talking about, that we know shapes and defines our lives. I have a friend who is an amazing artist and makes beautiful pottery. Of course, there's all sorts of arts and artists. This is a well-honored tradition through all of human history of people who create beautiful things. And the track record is that oftentimes they suffer, they struggle. They're creating this beauty and meaning, but it isn't necessarily something that's rewarded or valued, especially in real time, in the current time. And I heard this quote. I don't know where it came from, so I don't know who to give attribution to. But they're talking about this idea that there are some things that we need to do, even though they might not be rewarded, and other things that are just more likely to be rewarded kind of here and now in the moment. And this person, who I think was an artist, said, some actions make the world go round, and some actions move the world forward. And I thought that was really helpful because even in people's roles, it might have been that some people make the world go round and some people move the world forward. I'm not sure. But the idea is we all need people to do very practical things to help us along this life. We have bus drivers, we have surgeons, we have butchers, we have all kinds of people serving very practical everyday roles that are very meaningful, very needed. And if they're not there, it's hard to get something done or get through your day. And then you have this whole other category of thing where you have poets and writers and artists and spiritual and moral leaders who maybe they're not getting compensated for what they're doing, or maybe they're not getting compensated very well. And yet what they're doing is so important that it's not just making the world go round day by day, that next spin, that next rotation of the earth, but they're moving the world forward. They're actually changing the world from one day to the next. And that is certainly no less important. But it's hard to see the immediate fruit. It's hard to see the immediate benefit. Both are very important and needed. People who create artifacts of beauty and truth and goodness, that can be a very lonely, thankless, unrewarded role. And this friend of mine, she makes beautiful art. But even she was trapped with this market paradigm of, oh, do I need to be making money at this? And how much money do I need to be making? And if I don't make money, is it a failure? And am I wasting everybody's time, wasting my time, wasting my family's time? It's just so easy to be in that space. And the reality was, she did not need to apply that market paradigm to herself, but we're saturated in it. How do you not do that? And her art is of great value, regardless of how the quote market rewards it or not. We all get sucked into this market paradigm. We all think, I don't know if we all do, but I would say most of us, is this just so there? I have to think, what is the immediate monetizable or commercial value of what I'm doing, what I'm producing? Even though we have this awareness, this sense inside of us at all times, that is not what life is about. That is not what reality is about. That is not the shape of reality. And we push away this awareness. Because I think there's this pressure, this voice in our head saying, well, this is the game everybody is playing. So this is the game I must play. I got to play by these rules. I got to try to get success. I got to make sure I'm working for that market success. And it crowds out other ways of thinking. Even though if I think about it, I'm so engrossed and engaged. If I see somebody that I feel like is outside of that game, that is playing by different rules, I would say there is a shape of reality. And you, I would guess, believe this, that is independent of science. It is independent of things people told you. It is independent of official teachings of various religions that come through religious figures or scriptures. You have a deeply embedded sense of what that shape is and what that reality is about. That reality is relational. It involves love, joy, bonds, sacrifice, suffering, pain, vulnerability, transgressions, forgiveness, healing. And this awareness, this idea that reality is relational, it cannot be proven or disproven by science. It cannot be valued or devalued by proof or science. And it has little to or nothing to do with our dominant paradigm of the marketplace, with our obsession with success and accumulation of more and monetizing and commoditizing everything. I don't think I have to prove this to you. I think you already know it. You already sense it. I think we need to listen to that sense more and better. We need to talk about it. We should learn to grow and respect these internal senses that we have more. Because it's a legitimate channel of what we know about ourselves, about life, about reality, and how we know it. So, reality is relational. You know and sense things from the inside that nobody has to tell you. Nobody has to prove. Science can't prove, nor can it disprove. And it's telling you what life is about. Listen to that voice. That's the challenge for this week. Short episode. Thanks for joining the Willing Fool. See you next time.